Yo, gorillas, welcome to the next episode of the Athlete Insider podcast by Gornation. My name is Phil, and today we have a guest from Germany, the first guest from Germany, no other than the physiotherapist, the author, the influencer, the athlete, Leon, also known as Moving Monkey, and I'm really, really happy to welcome you here today.
Thanks, Phil, for the invitation. I'm happy to talk to you. And it's an honor that I'm the first German guest.
Yeah, it's also a little bit weird to talk to you in English. But yeah. I guess we will do it. And yeah, so everybody has access to the knowledge that you will spread today here. Because even though you do some posts, et cetera, in English, you're mainly known in Germany for your content, right?
Yeah, but we could say like 80-20 or something. 80% of my audience is German because that was my origin, where I started, obviously. And so 20%, it's getting bigger and bigger now because I talked to a bunch of people who wished they could learn something more from me because they found that the videos I did was something different than everything else they saw on Instagram and on YouTube. That's mostly German still, but two English interviews I did with Bot Mechanic and the Squat University. Some might know them as well. So I try my best to switch between back and forth German and English, and sometimes it's confusing for the most because they see my story and I talk in German and write in English, so they potentially can understand that. But I give it my best.
Perfect. And I still remember when you started like really, really getting big on social media. Today you have like 50,000 followers across social medias. I added everything. So yeah,
nice.
50,000 is already like a nice following, and people are really appreciating your input about mobility, about like being pain-free in movement. And but to begin the podcast interview with, you are on a birthday party and somebody approaches you and you don't know this person. How do you present yourself? What do you do? Who are you?
Potentially is that I first ask the question, who is the person I'm talking to? Because being interesting is maybe nice, but being interested is nice, is more nice to the person and to everything, to everyone you're speaking to. And well, if they ask me, they probably get the answer that I am a physiotherapist, as you said, but I don't work as a physiotherapist in the common way. So I give coachings, I give workshops and seminars around the German speaking countries like Switzerland, Austria, and Germany. And yes, I educate people, as you said before, about how they can be pain free, how they can be more flexible, more agile in their daily lives, but also that's most important for us as athletes in their sport, so they can have fun again with doing their sport. Because most of the people who came to me at first, as I started with Moving Monkey and didn't have my physio background, they approached me with the questions that are evolving a little bit nowadays, but mostly it was about pain. Like, can this exercise teach me about like being pain-free in my shoulder? Or is it something to be more pain-free and get stronger? So, well, everything evolves around being strong, flexible, and pain-free, as I say, or speaking from monkey to monkey, being flexible like a monkey and strong like a gorilla. That's what I do with Moving Monkey.
Nice. And you're targeting or speaking to athletes mostly. Is it right? What kind of athletes? You have the roots in a lot of sports, I guess. You can squat really heavy. You're doing like powerlifting, some stuff. Yeah, who are you approaching?
Well, I say that Moving Monkey helps the people who are ambitious doing any kind of movement. So you don't have to be an athlete. You don't have to be a high level athlete to do some mobility. That's my tools will help you, and that my coachings will help you. Mostly my focus is on people who are moving regularly. I also work with some parents of like any athletes who were also in some pain, and I can help them as well for sure. But my interest is mostly in people who are eager to move and who want to move. So I don't have to tell them that they should move more, because most people are coming to me have movement issues, but they have a set of routines, a regular training that they go about, and that is influenced by the pain in a bad way or in a negative way. And speaking from my own background, I was a sport, I was an athlete all my life, so it just connects better. You know, I can understand the athletes more than the person who sits on his ass all the time. Beep. mostly everyone who wants to move and is eager to move. And then I have some professional athletes I did fencing, judo, like soccer players, some from the German Bundesliga, or weightlifting, Max Lang, maybe you know him. He's the German weightlifter, not the German weightlifter, but like he's the German weightlifter, you could say that. I'm doing all sorts of stuff. That's why most people don't understand really what I do for myself, because they see me dancing, they see me doing gymnastics, like calisthenics and stuff. They see me throwing around some weights and doing handstands, but like what you do, but I can't relate somehow, because most of the people who are going into sports or any kind of training doing some particular training style. And like my own goals are so varied that I don't want to box myself into any kind of sport. So that's most one of you.
But still, I would be interested in your biggest achievements as an athlete, because I know that you have some stuff that some people really look up to. You have an incredible balance in handstand. You have extreme mobility. Your side split is crazy, you can also squat and deadlift, I guess, also really heavy. So let's talk about numbers. That's what the people, I guess, will be interested in.
Yep. So I view myself more as a generalist, not as a specialist, as I said before. That's why, my numbers are okay. But if you look into the particular sport, for example, powerlifting, for example, calisthenics, like 80% of the people who are doing that are better than me, I guess. I love doing the splits. I love doing handstands, working on the stalder press like for years now. but talking about numbers, my squat last time I checked was 1 year ago, 165 kilos, around that, 130, 140 for front squats, and then 200. 50 for sumo deadlift, 200 for elevated, like deficit conventional deadlift, and what else? Like you could throw in some weightlifting numbers, 90 kilo snatch and 120 kilo clean and jerk, something like that.
Okay. Nice.
But as I said, I'm just having fun doing anything that I really want to do. And I don't subscribe myself to any particular way, but learning from any kind of sport and absorbing the knowledge and then understanding how they think. And so I can help people who are doing that sport only that sports much better. So I can combine that with any like physio and mobility stuff to get them pain free. So that's why I do it for myself and also do it for my clients.
Okay. The question that I was focused most on for this interview is what mistakes do you see in the calisthenics scenes, maybe for beginners, maybe for advanced peoples, the most concerning mobility?
That's very interesting because when we meet on any meetup like the FIBO Expo or like the Bodyweight Day, where also many calisthenics athletes are, I mostly see like shoulder injuries. That's maybe 90%, and then some wrist and elbow issues because you're doing mostly upper body stuff, right? So talking about shoulders, elbows, and wrists. I saw that trend was coming to calisthenics about like 2.5 years ago, that they incorporated some mobility stuff in their warm-ups, maybe some cooldowns if there was still time, like training 2 to 3 hours takes a lot of time in your day. So skipping the cooldown was like, I don't need that. But thinking about the training in calisthenics, it's so hard on the joints. It's any training is hard on joints. So you have to think about how you can be more resilient to it. And becoming more resilient doesn't always mean that you're doing more weights, more reps, more volume. Sometimes it means less from the things you're already doing and incorporating something that you don't do regularly. And that's the only definition or the only reason why I would incorporate some mobility aspects. Because if you think about why you get injured, you have to think about your training in the way of what movement patterns you use the most. And if you're using pulling and pushing movements in one-dimensional fashion all the time, doing pull-ups, doing dips, of course you injure yourself because the stabilizing muscles are trained every time. For example, the lats are trained with pull-ups, but are also trained with dips. And most people don't see that. They see just upper body pulling and upper body pushing are two kinds of ways how to train your upper body. But that your lats are involved in almost any movement that you do with your upper body is very important because it's also attached to your shoulder. It has some function on your shoulder girdle. It has some function with breathing and on and on. And if you stress those tendons too much, then you get injured and you feel pain with movements that normally you can control very well, that you're also very strong in. But speaking from the mobility aspect or the aspect that you get a little bit balanced out in your training, I think about it in a way of how can I really efficiently incorporate mobility? Because as I said, cool down and warm-ups, they are not cool. So doing the human flag is cool. Doing the handstands is cool. Doing like 30 kilo plus muscle ups is very cool. I can't do that. Okay.
Weißt du, was war?
Ich glaube, also ich habe gerade eben gesehen, dass mein WLAN einfach hoch und runter gegangen ist.
Okay.
Naja, anyways. Vielleicht dachte sich mein Internet so einen langen Monolog, der soll nicht festhalten.
Das Einzige, aber Aufzeichnung läuft, steht da noch. Okay.
Ja,
das hat bei mir genau geendet. Das heißt, wir können einen cleanen Cut machen. I can't do that nach den 30 Kilo Muscle-Up.
Ah, ja, ja. Okay. Mhm. But what's not cool is to get injured. So always think about your training in that way. Think about ahead. Don't think about the next training and maybe the next week of training. Think about long term. If you get injured now, it could mean that you're out of training for months. And talking about shoulder injuries, my girlfriend, like Monique Koenig, who is known in the calisthenics scene, who started with calisthenics years ago, was thrown back almost 1 to 2 years from a shoulder injury because she did the human flag, not really properly warmed up. It did a crack in her shoulder. She could train. It was all fine. But then one week after, she couldn't move the shoulder anymore. And it got worse and worse. And the doctors were talking about a shoulder fix, and it was not that she was not strong enough, but hadn't prepared her body in a way that she could handle stress, even though she was not warmed up. You can make your body resilient in a way that you can throw up some pull-ups, no problem. You can sit here like on a desk and do 5 pull-ups, all right, but doing really complex movements like the human flag or like a handstand, just do the basics every day, and you will find a lot of basics on my channels. Just do the basics every day to prepare your body that it could handle any motion anytime. This is how I think about my own body, about the body of my clients, that the stress they get on in training, that's just one tiny bit, because all that stress that accumulates over the week, over the days, on stress that you bring back from work in your training, that you bring back from like your relationships or some kind of that also plays in to the role of how much stress your body can handle. So it's not only a discussion about doing mobility exercises, it's a discussion about how do you view your body as a continuum between pushing the boundaries and pushing your limits in your training, but also pushing everything else that deals with like calming the body down and giving your nervous system rest.
Okay. When you talked about basics, the first thing that came in my mind is push-ups, dips, pull-ups. What is your definition of basics? Like, do you have one or two examples?
Yeah, I view it most of the time as the three main joints that are important for your movements. That's the hips, the shoulders, and your spine. And like the big three, as I call them. And also you can do some whatever wrist exercises, foot exercises, of course, knee exercises, and on and on. It's important as well, but like follow the 80-20 rule. Yeah. 80% are done by 20%. So the big three, hips, shoulders, and spine, incorporates one or two exercises as a warm up, as a morning routine, as a nighttime routine, and as a cool down. And you're 80% there. So, for example, think about the shoulder as a joint from the glenohumeral joint. So really the shoulder itself and then the shoulder girdle with your scapulas. For those, you should do 1 to 2 exercises. So one easy exercise that most any athlete should know is the scapula pull-up and the scapula push-up, just doing that. And the scapula dips as well, like training your scapulas in any fashion. And then doing some kind of shoulder cars. Like shoulder cars are controlled articular rotations, rotating your joint through his whole range of motion. That's what mobility is all about, moving the joints through its full range and maybe incorporate some kind of resistance. For example, do it with a rubber band, do it with a light weight or something like that. Because mobility is defined as great range of motion that incorporates some kind of strength and coordination aspect. It's not stretching. It's not like stretching the muscle out and waiting for the stretch to come, waiting for the adaptation to come. It's really actively working on your motions, just as with a pull-up or just as with dips. And to be honest, most athletes don't respond well to any kind of mobility exercise that are lightweight. That's why they found it very, very boring. And it's not about the mobility exercises themselves. It's just about moving the joints through his whole range. That means you could also do some kind of very deep dip that also could be a mobility exercise, or doing your pull-ups, not in the way you're doing always, but with more back extension, for example, like doing the archer back pull-up or arch back pull-ups. Some kind of lever, back lever, for example. One beginner version is the German hang or the skin the cat. It's a great loaded mobility exercise for your whole shoulder. So you don't have to stand on the wall or on a rack then stretching your pecs. It's not very throwing in a fitness term here, not very functional, but focusing more on really getting better at certain motions. And that's what I focus on with Moving Monkey as well, that you really see the motions behind that, the movement patterns behind those exercises, and progressing them. So we start with isolation and then integrating and then improvisation. So isolation, integration, improvisation is a great way to learn any movement that you want to get better at. And it's with strength training and it's also with mobility. For example, the pull-up, you will just hang at first. So isolating the grip strength, isolating the resilience of the shoulder girdle, that it hangs, that the shoulder really pulls out the socket and getting accustomed to that. Then doing some rows, integrating the grip strength that you developed, and then integrating it with some pulling motion. And then maybe progressing into improvisation phase, that you can do more and more pull versions in any kind of movement, way, movement pattern. Yeah, and that's the same for mobility. And that's also referring back to your original question. It's important for the basics.
Okay. And does somebody who does mobility, because I learned from you that the main difference between, there is a difference between mobility and stretching. For me, before I knew you, and that's like, where did we know each, get to know each other? 2017, 16, something like this. But there, back then I thought, yeah, black roll, this is mobility. Stretching, this is mobility. And all the stuff in between, that's also mobility. It was one big topic for me. But like, does somebody who does mobility still need stretching? Where is it beneficial?
Well, mobility is kind of a fitness term as well. And as you said before as well, many people get confused about what mobility really is. And I think it should be a semantic discussion. It should be a definition of a word, but more the way we think about movement, the way we think about our own body and our own training. So doing stretching, for example, you can look into the studies and on, and you will see that there's no real adaptation that occurs in the body if you stretch the muscle for longer time, and that there is no tissue adaptation and so on. Because the change that happens if you get more flexible or more mobile is in your nervous system. So that your nervous system says, I am safe in position XYZ. And that's the only thing we try to do. Or that's our only aim, that we make certain exercises, certain motions. I don't think in exercises, like we move. You don't have to go to a dog and say, like, do some downward dog or do some upward dog or do any kind of warm up. We have to do that because we sit on our asses, as I said before. So stretching can be helpful if it feels right for you. What I mean by that is that we have certain receptors in our joints, in our muscles, and so on, that signals our brain, for example, how in any in which direction we move our joints, for example, and where our body is in space, how we are aligned. Those receptors tell our nervous system, and our nervous system just asks the question, is it safe? And if it's not safe, then it restricts the motion. It restricts the motion in its greater range or in its coordination or in its strength. And strength as well, like speaking from the calisthenics aspect, is also just an adaptation from the nervous system, that it accumulated that certain stimulus over time again and again and again, and some tissue adaptation occurred, that you grew some muscles and so on, but more muscles don't mean more strength. And that's for mobility as well. The only thing you develop is a certain adaptation to that stretch. So you develop a certain stretch tolerance. And speaking from that, it could help you that you stretch, but I refer to that always as an active kind of stretch, because you want to get better, as I said before, in moving your body. But lying down and waiting for the stretch to come, as I said before, won't make you better at moving. So it's as simple as that. And stretching for me, for example, is a great way I calm down, because I love that sensation. But some people like hearing that podcast right now and saying stretching is not a great sensation for them. It's a threat for them. It's that their nervous system screams if they stretch too much, because they haven't adapted to that stretch. They haven't adapted this stretch tolerance. So to make it clear, stretching can help, and stretching can feel good for you. For example, for most of the ladies who are doing some kind of yoga, they love that stretch sensation. Although yoga is not stretching, yoga is meditation through poses. And it's always misunderstood today. Well, I'm doing yoga. It's not for my mobility. Well, yes, but no. And most importantly, it's how can you calm your nervous system down? And then you will have certain adaptation towards greater mobility in your shoulders and so on. Because mobility, as I said, is just a term. And we have to see what kind of restrictions does your body have that withholds that motion. For example, having a scar tissue. I just uploaded that on my story, that a scar tissue, for example, can hinder your mobility and strength in a great way. Not that the tissue itself is the problem, but the interpretation of your nervous system. I showed the exercise that I did with my client there, and I showed how I assessed it. I had him do an internal rotation of the shoulder in 90 degrees flexion, and then I pulled the scar up, and his internal rotation was immediately, like 1 second after that, much better. I tested again while pulling the scar down. It was worse, a lot worse. And he couldn't fight that resistance because his body said, well, scar tissue, why? You can't really know why, but you can see how you can manipulate that or how you can influence the body in a way that working on that tissue, working on that inhibition, he then can do much better in his CrossFit training. He can do much better in his handstand training and on and on. So it's more important to look about what kind of restrictions do you have and then what kind of tools applied are helping you the most. And not being dogmatic about a certain way. I'm not dogmatic about physiotherapy manual techniques. I'm not dogmatic about trigger balls and lacrosse balls and foam rolls and so on, because that does not help. We have to see the body. We have to see the movement itself and then connect it.
Okay, get it. So let's get practical, because we also received some questions from the community. One question that came first from Lilian Street Workout is when and how often should we train mobility? So really a schedule for the week, something that everybody can take today from this podcast and implement it in his daily routine.
Mm-hmm. Cool question. So you should incorporate it as a warm-up, of course, and then doing some kind of relaxation after your training. That could mean that you foam roll. That could mean that you stretch. That could mean that you just lay down and breathe or meditate or whatever. But that could also improve your mobility in a great way, as I said before and explained before. And as a warm-up, it should not take longer than 15 minutes, because I see a lot of people who are educating themselves on that topic and doing more and more and more and more and learning more and more. And then they are like 45 minutes doing any kind of stuff that you see online, doing some flossing here, doing some rubbing there, doing foam rolling there, triggering here, stretching here, doing this monkey exercise and whatever. 45 minutes and then, well, 2 hours of training. Then 3 hours total training time. Well, you're wasted after that. You won't improve on your mobility, I can promise you. So 15 minutes as a warm-up should be fairly enough. Focus on your spine every time, every day. Every day is spine day, because it's our main body part. It's our main thing that we control ourselves through space. And then anything that is needed for your training today. So if I'm doing some kind of pull-ups, do some kind of pull-ups. And then for a cool down, what I refer, do anything that is the opposite of what you've trained. So doing 5 minutes, anything that goes into pushing the shoulder girdle forward, doing any kind of like protraction with your shoulder girdle and stretching out the back, the mid back that is constantly under, was constantly under pressure. So 15 minutes as a warm up, spine every day, and then specific to your training, cool down, maybe 5 minutes, doing some kind of breath work, doing some kind of relaxation, what calms you down, and doing the opposite of what you've trained. And then working on your specific issues, maybe 2 to 3 times a week. So if you have problems in your hips, if you have problems in your lower back or something like that, 2 to 3 times a week with certain drills that suits you or your nervous system the best, should take you a great, or is a great deal for you if you do it for 1 to 2 months, and then you can work on the next thing. And speaking from individualized programming and mobility, that's what I do in my coachings and so on. But at first, just try what feels better afterwards. And if you don't progress, then everything else from strength training applies. Change something. Change, for example, the volume or intensity that you're doing it. Change the frequency. If you're doing it 2 times a week or just 1 time a week, as with strength training, training a muscle 1 time a week won't get you any far. And the minimum adaptation occurs on 2 times a week, frequency of 2 times. And I always say, just learn what you've learned from, or just take what you've learned from strength training and apply it to mobility training, because it's just movement as well. Yeah, and that maybe should get you started.
Okay. The spine. What does it, like, what advantage does it have for a calisthenics athlete to have good mobility in the spine?
Yeah. So your thoracic spine particularly is where your shoulder connects and is connected to. And if it's stiff, you won't get any range of motion in your shoulders, like internal rotation, overhead position is very bad if your spine is stuck in the mid-back. And if you look up the anatomy of your thoracic spine, of course, it's attached to a lot of ribs. So breathing is as important as doing some kind of joint drills, because if you breathe properly, your ribs are moving, so your upper back is also moving. Really don't mess that up, because we are so messed up when it comes to breathing right now. We are working and we are stressed out, we are running from one appointment to another appointment and don't focusing on our breath. And that's why meditation and all this awareness training is more and more popular today, which is great. Focusing on your breathing helps to improve thoracic mobility, which helps to improve your main joint that you need for calisthenics, your shoulder. And then everything else, your spine is your midsection, and your midsection should be strong, but also should be something that you can move. Because if you can move something, it's generally safe for your nervous system. And if it's generally safe, you're more flexible and less prone to injury. And looking at it from that perspective, there is a certain hierarchy in your nervous system that goes something along those lines, that everything involving the midsection, so your spine, is more important than anything else, obviously, because there is your central canal going through your spine. And if your central canal is ripped apart, then there is no more life. So up to a certain point, like anything up to here, there is life, but there is not the life you know before. And I always say, you can live without legs, you can live without the hips, you can live without arms and shoulders, but you can't live without the spine.
Okay. Nice. That's a good answer. So Mitya Rose from Hamburg, I think, is asking, how important is wrist mobility? And I know that you spend also quite some time on your wrists in handstands. Yes. So how important is it?
Especially important as well when it comes to anything upper body, because we always look at the body as very biomechanical, in a very biomechanical way, in medicine and physiotherapy and in sports, like just focusing on the aesthetics. And maybe, yes, say bicep is more aesthetic than forearm muscles, but having, or let me explain it in a different way. Have you seen someone with very, very strong forearms and having a ton of grip strength that is weak?
That's a good quiz question, but I don't know someone.
Look to the strongest in our strength training field, strongmen. Do they have bad grip?
No.
Calisthenics athletes, the best of them have incredible grip. They can hang for minutes and minutes. And it's not only about grip strength, but also, like, as I said before, movement and being able to move. If you watch this on YouTube, you could try the following. Move your hand. And now try to have your hand stay fixed and move your wrist.
What?
Yep. Okay.
We stop it
and
here.
That's, and well, I can do that. I don't have to show. I don't want to show off. talking about that, wrist mobility is especially important if you look into the nervous system as well. There is something that is called the homunculus. The homunculus is a scheme that shows or just represents. It's just a picture of a person with really, really big hands, really big lips, a big mouth, but with a tiny body and a big head as well, kind of big head. And that shows how our body is has some sensoric fields in the brain. So how big is the body map for a certain region of the body? So body map is, you could imagine playing a video game, like a how do you call that in English? Like role game?
Role play.
And you have to discover a certain map area first to achieve something there, or like to unlock that certain area in the map. And it's the same for our nervous system. If our map in our head, so the representation of certain movements, is lacking, for example, for the wrists, there's a big, big, big gap between everything else in the body. So you have to move your wrists, you have to strengthen your wrists, and you have to make them resilient. And it's especially important for the handstands as well, as you can see here. Without any wrist mobility, you won't be able to do the handstands for long, or you will injure yourself because you cannot stand into a really proper position. There's no real proper position. There's only improper preparation. So it helps a lot with training handstands and any kind of movement for your upper body concerning strength.
Okay. So when you talk about handstand, the next joint that directly comes to my mind, in general, the first joint, in my opinion, that prevents people from having a good handstand is the shoulder. So Gian Martino, I guess from Italy, asks how to increase the mobility for the handstand, and I think this is the most question, and I know it. It's the most questioned and the most asked question about mobility, because I feel like when you do the handstand, it's the movement that shows the most where your weak point is, because you can see somebody can't stretch his legs. He has weak core. He has not really good overhead mobility, stuff like that. So to come back to the question, how to increase the mobility for the handstand, Leon?
Mm-hmm. As I said, with the wrists, you will wonder how much of wrist mobility will increase your shoulder mobility as well. Because as I said before, everything is nervous system, everything is brain. If you work on some part of the body, anything else will be influenced. Like pulling on the t-shirt right here, everything else on the t-shirt is influenced. And that's the same with our mobility in the rest. So the first thing that comes to mind concerning that is really look at the weakest link of your chain. So is it really the shoulder, or is it your mid-back, or is it the wrist? And going from the weakest link to the next weakest link, because you're only as strong as the weakest link of your chain. So then focusing a lot on wall drills, because as I said before, making it specific is more important than doing a certain mobility drill just for the sake of doing that shoulder mobility drill, because you get better in what you trained in. So if you don't progress with certain shoulder exercises in your handstand, then make it more specific. What do I mean by that? Make it more specific. For example, do more on the wall, for example, and focusing on really pushing up and back for the shoulders. But that goes only as far as you can really move the shoulder there on its own without loading it. So don't load on this function. Never add load on this function. Never add load on this function.
Yeah.
Speaking properly here. No, you have to say to your intern, make a note and fill in the beat there. Yes, so make it specific. Never add load on this function. So what I mean by that? If you cannot move your shoulder girdle in its own way without loading it, and can you move it in any range, and in particular in that range you want to get better in, for example, the handstands, can you move your shoulder girdle in your scapulas in the overhead position? If you don't come that far, work yourself up to that. And then all those rules apply to that as well. Isolation, as I've shown, then integrating it in a bilateral motion, for example, and then integrating it, for example, in a regressed version of the handstand, for example, just a pike push-up version, and then doing just those circles, and then hanging, for example, hanging and doing those shoulder calls. Well, and then doing, for example, as I said, wall drills, certain type of wall walks. So getting the feet onto the wall and walking it up with the belly towards the wall. And that is very important that you focus on the overhead position all the time. And if you can't get really close up to the wall, just work yourself towards it. And well, then doing a lot of hanging version mobility stuff, as I said, with the shoulder cast in the hang version is also great, because it's kind of like the handstand. It's the same position, but it's loaded in a different direction, which makes it a little bit easier at first. And then, as I said, go onto your hands and do anything that is related towards that. One particular exercises I have in mind, I call it in German Handstandpaket, like the handstand parcel, the handstand package. So you walk up to the wall. I imagine it how I should describe that. So you walk up to the wall in a wall walk. So you stand in a handstand, not really close, maybe two hands away from the wall. Getting your feet together and then sliding your feet up and down. So getting the feet closer to your body, because there is some space. As I said, you don't be up close to the wall. And then getting them back up. Getting them back down, getting them back up. And as you get better, you can move closer and closer towards the wall. And that's a fantastic exercise because it's very, very specific towards the handstand. But moving your legs down makes it much, much harder on yourself to elevate the shoulders and to keep that thoracic extension. Most people want to fall back and lean more and so on. But really keeping those points, those joint alignments from wrists, from elbows and shoulders all the time is the most important thing in a handstand and for really great handstand stability. And that's one drill. I hope you could imagine listening to that. And otherwise, just look on my YouTube channel for the handstand playlists, and there's a lot of exercises for the handstands.
I think I will ask you afterwards the interview so I can insert a small clip in the YouTube video at least. Prikush Boyka is asking, at what age did you start calisthenics and why? And because I know that you already did some stuff besides, but when did you get in touch with calisthenics?
Like really deep into it through Monique. I did something before through Ido Poltau, who introduced me to the rings and introduced me to the handstands. So this is what I did before. And then, well, let me count, like almost four years ago. So 5 years ago, I was with Ido, and then like three and a half years ago, Monique brought me into that. So it was something that I did in my youth as well, because I remember being in my room doing push-ups and push-up versions over and over. And the only pulling motion that I did was a table row. So hanging on the kitchen table and rowing. But later, maybe some water bottles that I rowed, but I was doing so many push-ups. Maybe that's why I won the challenge one time on the bodyweight days, but
yeah.
Like doing 280 kind of pull-ups in a row.
Push-ups. But that was
push-ups. Well, pull-ups, I can't do that. referring to that, I was doing push-ups and push-ups and push-ups, training so badly. And of course, some sit-ups, push-ups and sit-ups. That was the only thing I did like 6 years ago, or no, 10 years ago. So started 10 years ago in a very way, and then very honestly, 4 years ago.
I think everybody start, if you asked who started calisthenics like this, like, I don't know, some people watched Dragon Ball, and they did like, wow, now I'm training to become a Super Saiyan. And but I think for some people, it's even like wrestling, or like I remember watching wrestling as a child or adolescent.
And, WWE.
WWE.
The Undertaker. Yeah.
Do try this at home and at school, yeah. Everywhere. So, yeah. And or strongman was also something that the stones, mm-hmm. the sleds, etc., stuff like that. But yeah,
on D-Max.
Yeah, always. Like the German television.
Pulling the trucks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Okay.
Inspired by big guys.
Riff Beatbox is asking, how long does it take to increase my leg mobility when doing daily stretching? And we talked about like a lot what you can do this week.
Yeah.
You can how you can change your or adapt your workout to. But how long does it take to see like real results in mobility?
Mm-hmm. As I said before, it depends, and it's the question you will get from every like trainer and physio and therapist who is honest. It depends always, because speaking from the weakest chain, as I told the story about the scar, changing immediately the mobility, it always can change immediately, but making it long lasting, you have to train it. And maybe I refer on that note, let me refer to the adaptation on strength training here again, because in strength training there is a certain peak starting like 1 month, and then you have one little peak, like these noob gains that you make in your first half year of strength training, and then you're plateauing. But then there is a little more adaptation and a little more, and it goes just the stairs, like steps by step by step. And then you rest and make maybe a big bump, and then little by little. And with mobility, it's more like exponential growth, like interest rates. Because a lot of people are stuck because they don't do it for long. They get frustrated that the real adaptation does not take place as they know it from strength training. And that's why I refer also in our book, Calisthenics Meets Mobility, so Calisthenics X Mobility. I have a certain graph there that shows that bumping up the ladders with the strength training and with mobility, it's more that nothing happens for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then a little by little by little, and the more you do it and the longer you do it and the more consistent you do it, the better you get. So for me, getting better in certain mobility exercises happens like that, because my body is adapted to that way of training. And I find it very unique that it's the only way where it goes like that. Like, you don't adapt to strength like that, you don't adapt to any other skill like playing the piano. There's always like these little by little increases, but really having a big exponential growth, I just found that like doing my own mobility practice. So be patient. Yeah. And do it more.
Okay. Then the last question before we come to some quick questions and to an end of this episode. Lissy is asking, when can I finally do a split? Do I have to train for it every week? Do I have to train for it every week to keep it, or will it stay forever?
Mm-hmm. So
maybe to put here, split is not only important or cool to do it like this, because we also did a photo shooting in Cologne and we made some really nice shots with you doing a split. But it also helps a lot, and just to get the motivation for some guys here to learn the split, it helps a lot. For example, if you want to learn the straddle planche, the straddle handstand, it looks awesome in you. Stuff like that. Yes. Yeah.
And doing some kind of last time I didn't get that as well. Now I got it. Doing like the Van Damme.
Wow, yeah.
It was in New York, one of my favorite pictures. So if you want to have like cool vacation photos, not these common ones like standing with the back to doing like this, or throwing the hands up, disgusted by that. anyways, joking around. So the splits. I haven't trained the splits, or should I say, I wasn't focused on the splits any time. So it wasn't my goal on any day. I just found out on one training, I was very deep into the pancake stretch right there. Just let me try the splits. Oh, well, just a few centimeters before I really touch the ground. Well, then let me train it two more days and then I will get it. So almost in that way.
Crazy.
But why? Because I focused so much on having a proper squat and doing a lot of mobility for my whole, for everything hips, because as a former soccer player, you could imagine how mobile, how flexible I was. Not. That's it. Not. So I focused a lot of hip mobility. I did it every day. Every day I did the frog sit, like moving up and down, having that straddle legs. Every day I did this. Every night I did this for like 5 minutes, up and down, up and down, up and down. But more because I wanted to get a better squat, and I got that because having a better abduction helps you for your squat a lot. So then I used the squat in my strength training. So as I said, adapted to a certain movement pattern. And then what's very important as well is variation. So varying the exercises, not doing the frog sit all the time, but doing, for example, in your strength training, certain type of lunges, certain type of like dragon squat. So, or dragon squat and how's the end? Like archer, not archer, Cossack squats. Cossack squats, dragon squats, and shrimp squats. Because you just use your range of motion. You use what you have and try to make it better through moving it more. And then supplementing it with certain mobility exercises, the 90-90, the frog sit, and like the Cossacks in a certain mobility aspect. Because what I see most often is doing the same shit all the time. For example, doing the world's greatest stretch, like this lunge position where you plant one hand on the ground and rotating or pushing your leg out to the side. And that won't get you any far or any further if you're doing it all the time with the same intensity, with the same rep scheme, and on. Like, focus on strength training. Do anything that you do in a strength training, doing some kind of rest, doing some kind of adaptation and variation of your training style and training techniques and training exercises, and then having the right expectation. Because especially with the splits, having false expectations or too big of ambition is very nasty, because it gets you into a big injury very fast.
Okay.
So just be ambitious, but also respectful of your own body. So having, more example, 1 year in mind is very important.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. You tell people you learned to split in 2 days and then you tell them to be patient. I think that's a little bit unfair, but yeah.
I worked on my hip mobility for over like 2 years, and then I just found out, oh, well, that works pretty nicely.
Yeah. I think back liver is an exercise that has the same phenomenon for some people. they do a lot of basics for years, and then they try the back lever, and it works somehow. Like, it doesn't look perfect the first time, of course, but it's like an exercise also that you just learn by doing basics or doing other movements that complement this.
Absolutely, there's a big overflow effect.
Okay, so in the end of every episode we have some quick questions, some quick answers. Pizza or burger?
Pizza.
Are you a dog or a cat person?
Dog. I just heard duck. Duck. I was duck. I was like, a duck or a cat? What is that for a comparison? Of course, a duck. What a question.
What is your favorite location for holidays?
Oh man, I'm so the world hippie answer. Because like I love the sea, I love the beaches, I love like the sun, but I love a good hike, I love the nature. Anything that is not, I love New York, like big cities. I can't tell. Okay. Everything is nice.
Okay, everything is nice. Good. What would you work as if social media just disappeared?
Like an interior designer or anything like evolving around design.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't expect that.
Design, or maybe I'm just sitting at cafes and pretending to be a philosopher.
Okay. Do you have a favorite calisthenics athlete?
I really, really respect Lee Wei Turner for his age and everything that he does. So, he's very inspirational to me that, like also it combines with what I say to my folks all the time, like do the basics. So your future self will be proud of you. And he moves and he just kept moving and you see the end result. So just awesome.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite book?
One? Quick questions. I know I'm so bad at that. A favorite book. Years ago, I read The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, which was a very important book for me, from Dan Millman. So that was years ago. That brought me into the journey of a certain kind of self-development and so on. Nowadays, one very important that saved my life was Why We Sleep from Matthew Walker.
Okay.
Because I was doing this hustle mode on every day and being fatigued all the fucking time. Sleeping 2 to 3 hours or 4 hours and I'm cool. And then collapsing after 7 days into a 12-hour sleep. Not healthy. And it taught me the importance of focus on your sleep. So for any athlete who wants to get better, who wants to really progress even faster, sleep more. So there are thousands of books. We can make a whole episode about books. Like I buy books like every week and listen to 2 to 3 to 4 books in parallel. So okay. Just read. Just read.
Perfect. The best calisthenics event you've been at so far?
Oh, interesting. There weren't many I've been to, but the Bodyweight Day is very special, or was very special to me, because I felt that there was so much heart that went into that into that event, to cooperating and to also combining everything evolving around body weight. And that's what I love to see the most, like learning from others and learning from other sports and so on. So the body weight day is very special, and I hope that maybe there's a new one up and coming. And I know they are planning and thinking, but we will see.
Yeah, it's interesting that nearly like a lot of calisthenics athletes that were interviewed until now said the best calisthenics event they've been at was World of Bar Heroes at the FIBO. Mm-hmm. Or the bodyweight day. So that's like the organizer Basflex is really doing an awesome job, and they put a lot of heart in it, in their World of Bar Heroes series and everything they do for pushing calisthenics. So yeah,
Kreets to Flow and the team.
Yeah, Kreets. Something that we just said in one sentence, like it was last year you did the push-up record.
Last year I lost against Xavier.
Okay.
But it was not fair. After that, he came back to me and like said, "Well, maybe." Even
okay,
yeah, but like we did like 280 push-ups or something, and after 250, they said, "Well, if you arrive at 250 or something like that, you have to push without any pause," and because it could have done like 300, 350 for I don't know, but you're just into that zone. You don't hear anything, you don't feel anything, there is no pain that you feel, you only sweat.
Yeah.
And you're just doing the next push-up.
Yeah.
So we could have done it for like endless.
Yeah, I still remember like everybody screaming at you, and you having a big lake of sweat in front of you. That was crazy, and I've never seen so many push-ups in life in one set, like 280 in one set. Yeah,
yeah, it was 20 minutes, and the first like 2 years ago, where won because nobody expected that. Everyone was breaking after like 100 or something. I had like muscle soreness for a week.
Wow.
I couldn't move my arm one day after that. And the funny thing is, on that note, that directly after that challenge, we had to give back our rented car. It was a chip for our rented bikes. So after the week, we were in Vienna, and I couldn't drive the car to go. So wow. I really couldn't. I couldn't held up my arms.
Wow.
So Monique had to move. I was shaking.
Wow.
For 30 minutes after that.
Wow.
I slept like a baby. It was worth it.
Yeah. For 2 days straight.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, if people want to stay in touch with you, if people want to learn more from you, how can they keep, like, stay in touch with you?
Yes. So, anything like on social media, having Instagram, YouTube, a podcast as well. Just type in moving monkey, two words. Type in moving monkey in the GIF section on Instagram, but then you have to connect those two, and you have some cool handstand and splits GIF for your calisthenics athletes. Maybe fun. And tag me in your story then as well. You don't have to do a big tag, just tag me so I can see that you tag the GIF. Yeah, and anything else on movingmonkey.de.
Punkt, .de. That means dot, yeah.
punkt. Dot de. So it's mostly it's on German, my website, but I also do like English online coachings and so on. Some peeps of San Francisco or New York or yeah. So if you have any questions, just shoot out a message. Could take a little on the Insta. So if you have any questions, shoot me an email on info@movingmonkey.de. That will get a faster response.
Perfect. So before I give you the last words to end this episode, I want to say thank you to everyone listening to this podcast with a lot of input, with a lot of crazy stuff. And I'm really, really happy that you were here. Leon, thanks for your time. And yeah, if you want to support the series, let us a comment with who do you want to be interviewed next. This helps a lot. Also, if you have any questions for Leon, you can put them down below as well. And what else? Thanks for listening. Thanks for growing with us, and have a great day.
Yep. So I will end this episode. Thanks for you for the invitation again, and for everyone who is listening to the end, because attention is everything, and most people have attention like a goldfish. So you don't if you heal that. So thanks again. So everything that ends on my channel ends with keep moving, stay sexy. So I will keep it with that. And yeah, thanks again.